guys. Welcome to Wake Up with Wesley. I'm Wesley. It's a solo today. So today we are talking about the sometimes, all the time, very fine line between discernment and judgment. So this subject was inspired by me, kind of both. I guess like witnessing and then also being like drug into debates in some of the spiritual camps, like the love and the light people who think that any critical thinking or like a no ideology is, then you're like closed off. You're not open. You're not receptive. You're not abundant, or maybe you're judgmental. And also, I think inspired by all like the therapy talk, the therapy girlies spouting off that any critique of them is simply a projection. I've been noticing that so much lately, you know, like I feel that we've crossed somewhat of a dangerous line in the therapy talk TikToks, because my loves, it needs to be said, not every ex-boyfriend or ex-boss or ex-friend is in fact a narcissist simply because you broke up with them or they broke up with you. Like not everyone who is trying to have a constructive conversation with you is projecting. Not everyone disagreeing with you is gaslighting. I mean, right? Like, has anyone else noticed this? Because I feel like the holistic psychologist got huge and suddenly every single disagreement is somehow abuse, or there's like a mental illness label thrown around flippantly, or just like straight up avoidance of real stuff is happening because every single thing that people are hearing people say about them is just labeled up projecting. You're a projection. That's a projection. And I think that we got to be really careful out here, because throwing around these terms and these phrases or experiences, it's like, it's not a joke. There's a heavy weight that these labels carry. And I know that they should be used for real life situations, because when we use these therapy terms, when they're not exactly appropriate and just more so maybe they're convenient, or maybe it just is a conversation stopper, like, right? Like it stops all conversations. Well, then I know it only hurts and it minimizes like the real lived experiences for the people who are truly experiencing narcissistic abuse, or they're really like, it's a dangerous situation. They're experiencing gaslighting or true projection. So I've been seeing this so much, and it has me thinking a lot about judgment and discernment. It's like something I'm pretty passionate about, because we're all taught not to judge. I hate judgmental people. Like, I have a judgment about judgmental people. Like, that's a conundrum for you, right? But like, don't be judgmental. I don't want to be judgmental. Judgmental people are real assholes, right? Like I deal with a lot of judgment. Everyone does. But like talking about what I do here, a lot of camps of people really hate it. They don't get it. There's maybe ignorance, maybe biases, fears, a lot of confusion when it comes to talking about like alternative methods of healing that I do and I talk about. And I knew that this would be the case when I signed up to do this. I understand the territory I'm in. I signed up for it. It's part of my job requirement. Not everyone is going to like what I talk about or what I share, and that's okay. They're going to slap their judgments on me all day because I signed up for this. I can't be mad that people don't agree or understand my lived experiences, or I have to accept that they don't believe that what I do is helpful or healthy. So I just got to let it go. I can't judge the ones judging me. But what if we talk about the flip side of judgment, which is discernment? So it's like I look at judgment as a spectrum. Like a lot of things are on a spectrum. And on one end of the spectrum, you have the self-righteous, I'm better than you. They are closed-minded. They're jerks. There's always deep morality involved on that line, like good and bad, good and evil, light and dark, all that stuff. And way down on the other end of the spectrum, you have discernment. And in my opinion, discernment cannot be a more beautiful thing. It's like a spiritual gift, a knowing, a little internal compass that is like perfectly attuned to your specific, like your personalized, perfect life path. But what is discernment for you? It can feel like judgment to others or vice versa. And there are times when I have felt confused by this, like I've been unclear about the line. So I'm like, oh, I'm criticizing myself. I feel sort of rude when I realize I'm closed off from maybe an experience or a person and I can't exactly pinpoint why. There's like a bully that comes up sometimes in my mind pretty loudly and is like, you judgmental bitch. And then I'm like, oh God, like, oh, am I in judgment? I can get really kind of spun out by that. But then the wise one, the ancient one in my head, when I get still enough, open enough, and curious enough, when I stop criticizing myself and just become curious and thoughtful and aware, I have found that because I'm not perfect, there are times when I'm like, oh yeah, you are a judgmental asshole. But sometimes this ancient wise voice in my head is like, oh, no, you're not judging. This is your own mix of discernment. So it's like my discernment keeping me out of certain situations or experiences or people. Like that's, I guess, so how do you know when it's your judgment or when you're discerning? Like what's the difference? And I think it's hard to say because I know it's such a personalized sensory thing. I think only you can decipher truly, like really, when you're judging or discerning by the feelings or emotions that you experience when you are in a situation and you become thoughtful or more aware when you're forced to make these judgment calls. Like you got to sit down and be like, you got to think about it. And you need to create time and space to kind of do this. So I did find a lot of good information on how to best decipher between discernment and judgment logically. And I love understanding things in my mind because that really helps me tap into my physical body. So my favorite, and I guess I think it was the simplest one too, when I was looking into this, it was from this girl named Amber Campion. So it's Amber Campion at blogspot.com. She has this great article on judgment versus discernment. So she says this: judgment is linked to criticism. Judgment is reacting from fear, often related to the behaviors of others. So on the deepest level, judgment stems from a longing for recognition or maybe appreciation or maybe even validation. And in judgment, like when we're in judgment, our pain about it all is about what others are doing or not doing, how they're being or not being. And it's always bad or wrong. That's the judgment. Oh, they're wrong, I'm right. I'm wrong, they're right. It always has a story attached to it. So that's like a great way that you know that you are in judgment. Is there a storyline going on in your head? So she says this Amber Campion girl, she says, finally, judgment has a sort of, this is it. This is the final answer. This is the last straw. And that's the feeling. So when you notice that you're closed off to receptivity and you're not even curious about the other person's stand to even create mutual understanding, you know you're in judgment. You don't want to hear their sides. Your feet are so dug into the sand with your ideologies that you're like, no, I don't even want to hear yours. So discernment is the exact opposite. Discernment, on the other hand, this is her saying this. So discernment, on the other hand, is responding from love rather than reacting. So we can make appropriate choices for ourselves and the good of others. So in discernment, we are aware that we can never completely know or claim that our perspective is the only truth. This is subtle, she says, and it's so challenging to our ego. It's like very important because it might change how we relate to a situation, right? Like, so this is what she says about discernment. There is very little storylines or narratives when we are coming from a stance of discernment. There's often just feelings of compassion and goodwill, kind of like you just wash your hands of something, you know? So we often only get there, she says, when we've truly allowed for everyone to openly share. So, what does she say right here? She says this. We often only get here once we've truly allowed for everyone to openly share. So we could be in a position to respond rather than react. We can be coming from discernment when we are operating. We cannot be coming from discernment when we are operating from a black and a white standpoint or a this or a that assumption. And then she goes on to say that embodiment is an excellent tool for recognizing if we're coming from a judgment or a discernment. So when you focus on how you feel, like what I was saying before, if you feel heavy or distraught or angry, then you may be approaching a circumstance with judgment. However, if you feel light, even if it's a difficult situation, or maybe you're curious or compassionate, then you're likely approaching it from discernment. And again, if you notice yourself creating like a large or maybe like an endless narrative around the situation in which you're right and the other camp is wrong, you know you're in judgment. Pardon the interruption. Today's episode is brought to you by Element. So Element is my favorite electrolyte brand I've ever found. I use it every single day. So I start off my mornings by filling up my jug of water. I throw in whatever flavor of Element I've got at the moment. Right now, my favorite is raspberry. It's really good. And then I keep that jug out all day. So I'm getting hydrated first thing in the morning and then all day long. Staying hydrated is so important, you guys. I think a lot of people struggle with dehydration and they don't even know it. Some common symptoms of dehydration are sugar cravings, headaches, tiredness, dry mouth, lips and eyes, especially right now living in Utah. Holy crap. But taking electrolytes can help your body stay hydrated and more healthy. So right now, Element is offering my listeners a free sample pack with any purchase you make. So that's 8 single serving packets free with any Element order. Get yours at drinkelement.com/Wesley. This deal is only available through my link. So you must go to drinkelement.com/Wesley, and Element offers no questions asked refunds. So this means you get to try it totally risk-free. If you don't like it, share it with a little salty friend and then they will give you your money back. No questions asked. You have nothing to lose. I've gotten a lot of DMs asking about my routines. My Ned nighttime routine is like supreme queen. So Ned CBD is a great supplement for nervous system support. And I've noticed that using my Ned drops every night has greatly improved my sleep. So the quality of my sleep is better, which allows my body to adjust more easily and seamlessly into the parasympathetic nervous system. So that means rest and digest. You guys, CBD is such a big deal, and Ned really is the best you can buy. I love Ned because it's a full spectrum hemp oil, which means it's chock full of active cannabinoids, terpenes, flavonoids, and trichomes that all nourish our body's endocannabinoid system. And not all CBD is created equally. So when I tell you that Ned is the best, it is the best of the best. It offers functional support to our sleep, our stress, our inflammation, and our balance levels in our body. So you got to try it out. Go to helloned.com/Wesley or enter code Wesley at checkout to get 15% off any purchase. So that's helloned.com/Wesley and get 15% off. Thank you so much to Ned for sponsoring the show and offering our listeners a natural remedy for some of life's most common health issues. Now let's get back to the show. I have a story about the first time I had to really consciously practice discernment, and it probably wasn't the first time in my life. This is just the most impactful. It changed me fundamentally. So this was over a decade ago. It was probably between 2010 and 2011. Bronson and I had moved to downtown LA in a studio apartment, like tiny, 400 square feet. and we had a baby, or he was just a toddler, and I was pregnant with Remy. So I remember Bronson got an internship with a guy in the fashion district down there. And it's so funny because, you guys, he created a hoodie. And right now, 15 years later, he owns a hoodie brand. It's just hilarious. All the things we did in between that. But we started, this is where we started. He designed patterns. He made a hoodie. I remember his internship, it paid $600 a month. And that didn't even afford to cover our rent. So he had to get a second job where he worked nights. I tried to get a job. I remember I couldn't work because daycare was more expensive than any paycheck I would ever make. So we'd be even in more of a deficit if I worked. So that meant I was a pregnant 21-year-old married girl roaming around the streets of LA each day with a toddler in a stroller because we didn't even have a car. So I have to talk about where we lived. We lived on 7th and Main. We had no idea where we moved to when we moved there. This was a different time, you guys. We didn't have iPhones. We didn't have even a laptop. We just picked the first place. And we like didn't tell our parents, right? Like there was no older, wiser people looking out for us because we didn't allow them to do this. So 7th and Main, downtown LA. And this is years ago. LA was not what it is today. There was no Whole Foods, you guys. I cannot describe how gnarly this was. If you're unaware of that cross street, so like the block over, I could throw a rock. It was literally across the street was Skid Row. And that was our neighborhood. When we found our place, we stayed at the Cecil Hotel. That was across the street. There's a document. Just go watch it. You're going to die. But that was our life. We stayed there in a hostel until we got our like apartment across the street. And like our nighttime entertainment, because we were just so poor and also because it was too dangerous to even be outside when the sun went down, we would open up our 6-story window and we would listen to the streets come alive into what I can only describe as utter chaos. Like fights, screaming, drug deals, murders, real murders, you name it. Like we became, the human experience is so strange because we became so scarily accustomed to that. When that became our normal, I can't believe it ever was our normal, but it truly was like water off a duck's back after 6 or 7 months. It just was our everyday normal. It was typical for us to wake up in the morning and see another person had died during the night from a drug overdose or like a health ailment. Every day, you just, I don't know, you become numb. But I remember when we first arrived there, this lifestyle change, it was shocking to my nervous system, traumatizing to my nervous system. It was months of finding any sense of normalcy in it where, I mean, because everything and everyone felt scary because it was incredibly dangerous. I cannot tell you the amount of times like the best, the kindest homeless men or women, they would see me walking with a baby in a stroller and come like flank me, one on the right of me and one on the left of me to protect me from people who they knew were bad people. Like, so these people, they lived on the streets, the street people, that was the most jarring to me. It scared me the most. They ended up being my biggest protectors and my only friends for a year straight. I never made another connection to neighbors in the building, to any other normal, non-homeless person. Like I was the only stay-at-home mom there. People worked. Like it was me and the people outside. That's it. And I guess I made friends with, like I had a daily routine where I would go to like a little cafe. So like the cafe workers and the homeless people became mine and Zuri's people. They were the only connections we had in that huge city. So living there pretty isolated with also, I have the mama heart of a lion, protector to my core. Like it, I'm just on high alert all the time, hyper protective of my kids. So I recognize that my body started to attune to people's energy in a way that it never had to before. It never had to do it in this way before because it was real survival. I never had to be more aware of my surroundings and truly deciphering than the years that we lived there like that. So one experience changed me so fundamentally. If you ask my extended family, like, people know this story because it was deeply impactful. But I remember I was walking with Zuri in her stroller, and there was this homeless man who was our absolute favorite. He had tried to commit suicide years prior. So he had a gunshot wound to his head, and he survived. He lived, and then he became homeless. He lived on Skid Row. So he was incredibly severely deformed. There was no hiding his deformity, but he was the most gentle giant of a man you could ever know. And people were terrified of him the most. Me, I was the most. Zuri never was, not one time. She never was. She was so drawn to this man. And her curiosity met with his kindness. It softened this judgment that I naturally carried. But we became to know him, and he was just simply down and out. He didn't do drugs. He was completely nonviolent. He just stuck to himself. He was kind. He was a man with nobody, and he had an extraordinarily hard life. But yeah, I knew he was kind and he was good to his core. So we became friendly with him. And we had this routine of going to the same spot every day and then going home. It was like our morning walk. And we would grab a bagel, and it was Zuri's favorite thing to do because she was just a baby. She couldn't even eat a whole bagel. So she would eat her half. And when we would walk back and see him in his spot each day, she would give him her other half. And he would always ask her the same two questions. He would ask her about Hello Kitty and her shoes because that was her favorite thing at the time. And then they would chat about Scooby-Doo, and then we'd be off. So, I mean, I think it needs to be stated that it took me time to get here. My body needed time to move out of judgment and fear and biases and the stories I would create about all these different sorts of people. It had to move out of that to ever experience his goodness or his kindness. So one day, this is the story. It's a day like any other, and I'm standing back just kind of enjoying watching this interaction with Zuri and this guy. She gave him the bagel. And they would be like very short interactions, 5 minutes here. I mean, probably 3 minutes here and there. But we would talk daily. And there was, he like lived on a corner. So there was like a crossroads, like a stoplight. That's where he stayed. So this crosswalk, it was, I remember at a stop, and people were piling up like they do in LA. And I noticed a guy in a suit, and it was like a fancy, not a tux, but like incredibly formal. He stood out like a sore thumb, like in this scene of people. And he didn't look at me. He walked right past me. He was looking at like the crosswalk, waiting for the light to turn. And I will never forget this till I die. But I got the most empty, horrific, dark feeling I have ever had in my life. I mean, ever. And it was emitting from this man. It made me freeze. It was the same feeling it was as if there was a predator. Like all of a sudden there's a crocodile on the street where you just know it's dark and dangerous and you are in, it's just not good. Like it was my instincts. And I just was, it made me freeze. And then I went immediately to Zuri. I picked her up. I put her in the stroller. I'm like a little bit frantic. And our friend, the homeless man, he looked right at me and he said, "You get her out of here now. You and her go now." He stood up and like just got in between us and this guy. This guy wasn't even looking at us. I don't even think he noticed. He felt it too. Like it was the most strange encounter of my life. And I mean, he looked the best out of anyone there. The dark man. There was nothing strange about him at all other than how nice he was dressed. And it made no sense to feel the way I did, but it was true. It was true. I couldn't deny it. And I don't know why to this day that experience has stuck with me in the way it has, because I'll never know the story. I'll never have the details. I'll never know if I was right or wrong, or if that judgment was a judgment, if that was warranted, or if that was my discernment. But when I think about that feeling I had, I choose to believe that was discernment, because the feelings don't lie. And that time for me, it's when I started to build up this, I guess, in trusting my muscle of discernment. I utilized it a lot out there, like with all the different millions of people in a day in that city at that time, in a truly dangerous place where I had no business being there. But I built up this internal a mechanism that needed to speak loudly to me to keep me and my daughter safe and my mind not just crazy, right? Like, it couldn't go off of appearances or storylines or biases or what I was taught to fear in others or what I learned made a person a good person or a bad person. And that time period of my life, it taught me what I already knew. Like, I know you can't judge a book by its cover, but you really can't. I've realized you cannot visually see this stuff. And I've learned to trust my discernment. And in doing so, maybe you can come off as judgmental or dumb or naive or who knows what else, but I don't trust people's words or looks or friend groups. I gotta trust my feelings, and I gotta honor those before I honor what's socially acceptable. So I think we've all had those moments where, have you ever been around someone, a person that everyone around you is like, this person is the dopest, you're gonna be obsessed, you're gonna love them, and then you get around them and you're like, huh? Like, what? Like, I don't know, they're not for me. And like, I think it's our knee-jerk reaction to be like, well, I don't like them. And that's not true. When we say, I don't like them, that's not true. What I think is a more true or appropriate thing to say is, I don't like how I feel around them. And that's enough. You end there. It can stop there. You don't have to make up stories about how the person that you're feeling weird around, about how they're bad or this or that. Like, can it just be like, I don't like how I feel around them. Maybe it's not a vibrational match. And maybe our work with discernment comes in when we don't label or narrate our knowings. Maybe discernment is just acknowledging them, calling it what it is, not a match. And then you move on. And that's how you stay out of the judgy asshole vibration, that end of the spectrum. You just stop there. No more storytelling. No more good and bad. No more, I don't like them. They're this. They're weird. Just be like, not a match. So I guess this is my little offering to you all this week to lean into your own very special ratio of discernment. Play with it. Strengthen this muscle and call it what it is. It's a great thing. Think of it like your own perfectly attuned life compass pointing you to what exactly is meant for you and what's not. So with that, thank you so much for listening, and come back next week on Wednesday. Bye.